this means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. So we're going to start at the top of the show with some really terrible news that came out of New Zealand a few days ago. In New Zealand, 49 people who were gathered to worship at two different mosques in the city of Christchurch were gunned down by a man who had been planning this for quite a while. It seemed almost 2 years in the making. He had a whole manifesto. It was like 75 pages long. He referred to Trump in it, although he did say that, you know, I like some of his ideas, but in terms of policy, like, he's a joke. He's called Trump a symbol of renewed white identity, common purpose. And I don't know if you saw the manifesto or not,
no,
Susan.
No, I did not. I did not want to read that.
I read about half of it, and then I just couldn't do it anymore. But it was a big mishmash of all kinds of memes and text from like white nationalist, like propaganda type stuff. A lot of it was anti-immigrant stuff. It was, what was it called? It was called the Great Replacement. Now, you might remember what was being chanted by the Nazis in Charlottesville. Remember that?
Yeah.
The Jews will not replace us. Right. So this is a big kind of theme that occurs amongst white nationalist movements. The idea that they're being replaced by other minorities. So a lot of this manifesto was about immigrant birth rates and things like that. He said, look, I have nothing against Muslims as long as they stay in their own lands. They're coming here. But of course, he was somebody who said he was of European stock, and he certainly is not native to New Zealand. Yeah. So there was that irony. Anyhow, it was terrible. He also live streamed it, like using like a camera that he wore on his head on Facebook Live. I mean, it was pretty horrifying. The youngest victims were like 3 and 4 years old. And he, in fact, went back into one of the mosques where he get the second mosque where he killed the most people, and just to make sure they're dead, like actually shot them in the head. He was arrested completely in one piece. And let's see what happens to him. But response from the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, really has been inspiring and on point. It's the kind of thing that a community in this kind of crisis, I think, really needs. She went into the communities, she went into the mosques, you know, she hugged them, she cried with them, and she named the issue. So let's listen to Ardern talk about this incident and also then what Trump had to say about it.
I want to be very clear, though, that our intelligence community and police are focused on extremism of every kind. Given global indicators around far-right extremism, our intelligence community has been stepping up their investigations in this area.
You see today white nationalism as a rising threat around the world.
I don't really. I think it's a small group of people that have very, very serious problems. I guess if you look at what happened in New Zealand, perhaps that's a case. I don't know enough about it yet.
Yeah, well, to Trump, the whole tragedy here, the whole victim here is him. Because people dare to suggest that his rhetoric might have encouraged or inspired the shooter, despite the shooter is saying exactly that.
Yeah. The shooter also said that Candace Owens was like his biggest inspiration. Now, I don't know. Some people are saying that was kind of like a
troll.
He was being sarcastic. Yeah, I don't know if that's the case or not, but I mean, it was, you know, she spent a lot of time defending all that online instead of actually talking about the victims in the case. But so I want to talk a little bit about this issue of white nationalists and domestic terrorism, as it's called in policy circles. I actually worked, you know, in this space, both in policy and practice, during the Obama years, actually 6 years, during the Obama administration. That's when I didn't practice law. I just kind of worked on this stuff. So I thought it might be interesting to listeners to kind of understand in the United States how this stuff operates, and what the real issues have been and why it's been hard to deal with, the rise in white nationalist groups and militants and, right-wing militants.
Yes, please do.
So, you know, counterterrorism is something everybody is familiar with. That's called CT in policy circles and law enforcement circles. There was a shift to something called CVE in 2011, which Obama administration floated, which stands for Countering Violent Extremism. And it was a shift in thinking about extremism, in that what they wanted to do instead of counterterrorism is all about arrest, convict, prosecute. Where a CVE was meant to be like kind of a soft power thing where you're working with communities, looking at root causes and, you know, instituting programs that might help, you know, like stem the rise in extremism in young people, stuff like that. The problem with both of these programs is it was exclusively focused on Muslim communities in the United States. Now, when I worked at both the New America Foundation, I did some independent work. I worked with Homeland Security on these issues. Over and over again, me and others who were in this space would say to DHS, say to the National Counterterrorism Center, you know, the FBI for a decade now has been saying that it's white nationalist domestic groups that are the greatest threat to the homeland, not like international terrorist organizations. So why aren't any of these efforts, whether it's CT or CVE, focused on any of those? And the problem was the law. The problem was that the law and the mandate. So NCTC, which is the National Counterterror Center, they're like, we're not allowed to even call it terrorism unless it's international. We are not allowed to do any of our work unless it's got an international. So they could work on cases in the United States as long as they had a foreign link. And of course, all of those were like ISIS inspired or Al-Qaeda. But none of these agencies had any mandate or authority to do anything about like white militant groups. They say that is going to be like a local law enforcement problem.
It is, literally.
Right, right. Or the FBI, right? And there were times the FBI did, in fact, intervene and stop attacks from happening, and good on them. But they never got the kind of funding and attention. So it's actually just today, there was an article written on Lawfare blog by the former NCTC director, and he's calling now for an expansion of the mandate to include traditionally considered domestic terrorism. Because all these years they have not been allowed to even look at it. And this was in direct response to what happened in Christchurch. And just one quote I want to read from it before we move on. He says, the United States has long built its approach to counterterrorism based on a fundamental distinction between international terrorism and domestic terrorism. The phrases were always misnomers to some degree, but the recent mass shooting at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, has revealed just how unsuitable that distinction is for today's terrorist threats. Governments must reorient their counterterrorism approaches to reflect an environment in which all terrorist threats have transnational dimensions, and they must do so quickly to address the growing threat of far-right violent extremism. And I can't tell you, like, so many people have been waiting at least a decade to hear this kind of language. So I'm glad to see the shift, but I have a feeling this administration is not going to embrace it.
I mean, we've had how many incidents in the U.S. now like this that have right. hardly made a ripple?
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I mean,
the synagogue shooting in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Even in, I mean, like Dylann Roof. I mean, like, it's not just this administration, but this administration, because their white nationalists are like their base. Those are their people.
Trump tweets that every terrorist attacker should be executed unless they're white. And then he says nothing.
He did not tweet that.
No. About the anyone who's a shooter who's brown, he tweets that they should be executed. But for white shooters, too. You never hear about it.
You never hear about it. And he says their families, too. He said the families of terrorists should also be killed. But he doesn't consider this. I don't know if he's even called this an act of terrorism. You know, but I'm glad that the media actually did call it. And which is honestly,
there's no other word for it. It's not even debatable.
It's not debatable. But Susan, you'd be surprised. For most of the time after 9/11, it was not called terrorism. I cannot tell you. It was always called like a mass shooting. And you know that. That's the language we've heard.
Well, there can be mass shootings that are not terrorism, but this one clearly was terrorism in every possible definition of the word.
Right, right. That's true, right. But I'm saying that this is the problem. So under laws, you cannot prosecute. And I work with a couple of organizations that are Muslim Jewish organizations that are trying to get on a state level, well, either the establishment of hate laws, but if they already exist, an enhancement to include terrorism charges, which don't even exist in federally. Most states
yeah.
for these kinds of things. They just don't even exist. So you could say, for example, I mean, when we think about terrorism, if there is some kind of ideological, racial, religious component, political component, right, that's called That's one of the ways they determine whether it's terrorism, right? Like, it's not just a personal thing. It's not a person going into a post office and shooting up, you know, ex-colleagues. So there's some kind of a belief system that's attached to it. Well, we see that in a lot of mass shootings that have happened in this country by white shooters, and they still haven't been able to classify it as terrorism or charge it as terrorism. So anyway, something to think about, something I think about at least. But yeah, it was bad. And I remember the night that we got the news about the New Zealand shootings, I was like, oh my God, my daughter has to go to school the next day. What am I going to my 10-year-old? If we don't tell her, she's going to hear it anyways. So we got to tell her something. So that was a crappy way to send her to school. And I just got an email forwarded by a friend, one of the largest mosques in Maryland, which is actually the mosque that, for those of you who follow us in our other life with the Adnan Syed case, where Adnan used to attend, the Islamic Society of Baltimore, just sent out an email saying they are hosting an active shooter training for people of all ages. Yeah, great. Good stuff. All right, moving on. Now, you know, I'm not a crazy cat lady, but I do have two cats that I am. Well, I'm crazy about them. And you know what? My kids are also crazy about them. Now, it is my 10-year-old girl's, or my 10-year-old daughter's job to clean the litter. Okay. And I cannot tell you how obsessed she is with watching the color of the litter because we have pretty litter. So you know what that's about. But tell our listeners why the color of pretty litter matters.
Yeah, it's not just to know if they use the box or not. Pretty litter is actually a way to tell how your cat's health is doing. Because pretty litter is also amazing for your cat's health. It changes color to detect underlying illnesses and before urgent care is needed, saving you money, stress, and potentially your cat's life.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's a diagnostic tool for your cat. And I say this as a daughter of a veterinarian. I mean, to me, like, it's like pretty much the only litter I'm ever going to use. And I also love it because other litters actually contain ingredients and additives that can be damaging your cat's health. But pretty litter is created from naturally occurring minerals that are totally safe for your cat and virtually dust free.
So do what we did and make the switch to pretty litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code 45th for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code 45th. prettylitter.com, promo code 45th. So this week, Trump had a presidential first. He had his first veto on a piece of legislation. And it has to do, of course, with his wall. And Obama got very used to vetoing bills. It was a pretty common occurrence. But here with Trump, when he's had mostly unified government up until January, the occasion never arose. Now, thanks to his emergency declaration, some Republicans, a very small number, but just enough, have decided to try and reject his emergency powers, that they basically filed a bill that rejected the designation. Trump vetoed it, so now it goes back to the House and the Senate, and they have to get an override in order to pass it. It's not going to happen. I don't think there's any speculation whatsoever that there's the votes in the House or the Senate. Definitely not the Senate, not even the House, to meet that number.
Right. So his national emergency will remain in effect, basically.
Yes, he will. Although, again, it's not even clear where the money is going to come from. He's still trying to shuffle around and find these billions of dollars.
He'll strip FEMA. He'll take away, like, school lunch programs. This guy, he'll find the money. And it'll come out of the pockets of people who need it.
It's a bonus to him.
It's a bonus for him, exactly. I wonder also, can there be legal challenges raised to this declaration?
Well, yes, there will be. I mean, the odds of this actually getting implemented are very low because it'll be caught up in the courts for a long time yet.
Mm. Let me ask you this. Do you think obviously when Trump does anything, it just is, everything's nefarious to me anyways, but I want to try to be fair on this. Let's say this was Obama and this happened to him. Do you think there would have been the same kind of response if he issued a veto on a bipartisan bill?
You know, I'm trying to think of an occasion that came up. I'm sure it must have over 8 years.
Yeah.
But I am drawing a blank. Mm. And this wasn't just a bipartisan bill. It was a specific rebuke of the president by at least some members of his party. So that definitely was not something that came up under Obama to this degree.
Oh, you know, Trump has taken names. He's got a list of those people. Oh, he knows the votes. But interestingly enough, I read today that Trump's popularity had dipped a bit in January, but it's back up.
Yeah, doesn't matter. His numbers always go back to the same place. the same low place, but he can never, ever stay down below that for long because there is a fixed segment of America that will forgive him eventually.
Teflon Don. He's Teflon Don.
It's not Teflon when you're always underwater, I don't think.
But he never drowns. He never drowns, damn it. Did you catch this clip from a Steve Bannon rally? Which, by the way, why is Bannon having a rally?
I did not know Steve Bannon was having rallies at all, period.
Right. Why is he having rallies? What's happening?
Who was attending?
People who love Trump.
But even people who love Trump don't love Bannon.
That might be true, but this person did.
Never in my life did I think I would like to see a dictator. But if there's going to be one, I want it to be Trump.
Yeah. And you know what? I wasn't shocked at all. I'm like, of course, we already know this. We know people who are on the Trump, like they don't care. And he was absolutely right when he said he could shoot somebody and he wouldn't lose any of his base.
He might lose them for like a month or two, but they'll come back. And only a few of them.
I don't even know. Or he might gain some more to even it out. Because he's, like you said, he seems to come back to the same levels every time. Well, speaking of dictators, he was hosting one today. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk about a bit of news that actually Susan and I kind of hung out today. And this came out while we were together. And I was a little bit shocked because I've never actually heard this happen. And I've attended State Department briefings before in person and over the phone. And, you know, a lot of agencies have phone briefings. It's not unusual. Sometimes it's for media. Sometimes it'll be broader. But on Monday, the State Department had a briefing and it said it would not be giving a transcript of the briefing or telling us who was going to be on the call. And this was Mike Pompeo who held the briefing. So the entire State Department press corps was excluded from this briefing, and only, quote, faith-based media was allowed. Now, the State Department said that the phone briefing was to discuss international religious freedom. Apparently, he's about to head to the Middle East, so he's going to be discussing this. Now, whenever this administration talks about international religious freedom, they are only and exclusively talking about the freedom of Christian minorities in Muslim countries. And this faith-based media, I am guessing there was no, maybe, I don't know if there's any Jewish outlets, but I'm guessing they were like pretty much all evangelical outlets.
Earlier this year, I was in Australia with my husband to clean out his father's place and get some of the old stuff he had there, you know, mostly the photos that mattered. And his dad used to own a movie theater in a little town in Australia, like up north. And we're going through and we have all these old reels now, and like we're kind of like, should we toss them, should we not?
Oh wow.
And we kept them, and now I'm like, what am I gonna do with these things? Like one's from Rocky Horror, like
that's
old
awesome.
School like 19, yeah like that's they're awesome. The others I don't even know what they are yet, but now I know what to do with them. I'm gonna take them to the legacy box.
Oh my god, what a great idea.
So I can watch this original Rocky Horror.
Yeah, legacy box is fantastic. And I used legacy box last year and sent them all of our, you know, I collected like the family pictures and videos from like everybody in the family and sent them to Legacy Box. And for people who are not familiar with Legacy Box, they are the world's largest, most trusted digitizer of home movies and photos. Almost 500,000 families have trusted Legacy Box. They've got over a decade of experience and all the work is done by hand right here in the United States.
So look, don't lose all your old photos, old memories, old 1970s film reels. Send them to Legacy Box before they get ruined. Like floods happen, like water happens. A lot of the photos were in a box shoved in a corner.
Oh.
And if we, if I don't get them converted, who knows what's going to happen to them next? Probably a cat's going to eat them.
Yeah, it's a good thing you sent them to Legacy Box. And there's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. So visit legacybox.com today and get started. Because for a limited time, they're offering our listeners an exclusive discount. Go to legacybox.com/45th and get 40%, that's 40% off your first order. Go to legacybox.com/45th and save 40% off today. Get started preserving your past. So a former State Department spokesperson was like, this is just crazy because, you know, these officials are public figures and what they say is public.
It was Pompeo. Pompeo was involved.
Pompeo was on the call.
And they never, when the secretary himself, I mean, the attendees and like a transcript are standard. They're always produced.
Right. Nope. Which is kind of crazy to me.
Well, what are they hiding? Like, is this just them being you know, what, deliver
exactly
dicks.
What I'm saying. Why? What are they hiding?
They're trying to make it. I mean, are they trying to normalize this sort of behavior, or are they actually trying to hide something this time? It's hard. Probably the former, but you never know.
Right. It might be about just being able to do it versus what was the actual content of the call. I'm hoping somebody out there leaks it, you know, and says this is what was on the call. I mean, this is the first time. I mean, you know, the State Department has an actual Department of International Religious Freedom. I've had friends who worked in that space, in that department. This is just weird. The whole thing's weird to me. I don't know what's going on, but I'm hoping to find out more about that. But this is very problematic. I mean, imagine next you have a White House briefing. There's no reason. This is the State Department. This is not like some tiny little agency that nobody's heard of. This is the fluent State Department. They could do this with the White House, where they're like, nope, only the Christian media can come.
Well, they wouldn't say only Christian. They would just say only faith-based media, and then only invite Christian organizations, maybe one or two Jewish ones, and then they're not going to release attendees, so no one's ever going to know how deliberately skewed it is.
I feel like that has to be a lawsuit. Like how is this? I mean, the establishment, I don't know. This has got to be violating something out there, some kind of constitutional something. I mean, like, I don't understand this.
Also, why? I don't understand. The topic in general doesn't seem like one you'd want to restrict to a faith-based media interest. I mean, this is kind of an issue that affects all of us.
Well, I mean, not the way this administration looks at it, right? I mean, because I know people who've worked like specifically in this, and it's not a big department, by the way. I even used to know like the previous head of it, but mostly the focus is on the religious freedom of minorities in other countries. The State Department members outward facing. They're not talking about religious freedom in America. They're talking about religious freedom in like Iraq. Okay. And that means it's for the minorities there. So it'll be for, let's say, you know, Shias or Christian minorities or whatever. And mostly it's about Christians and Muslim lands. That's like the big focus of it. So I don't know what he would say. Well, here's the thing. If it's a briefing for media, aren't they going to report on it anyways, right? Isn't that how that works?
Yeah. I mean, it's unlikely that what was said in the meeting is itself some kind of scandal. It may have been rhetoric that was more objectionable or may have gotten interest from national media. But the bigger concern for me is probably the withholding of the attendees and the precedents. Yeah. It's starting where a cabinet level position can hold faith only media events that are secret and kept off the record for everyone else.
Right. And this happened right on the heels of the New Zealand shootings, which those are, you know, that's a minority in a different country. I mean, that's something that it's pretty troubling. Yeah. But this is exactly the kind of stuff that I would expect out of this administration, especially given.
Remember Tillerson?
Yeah.
Barely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, kind of, sort of. Well, Tillerson just was like, I talk to nobody ever. Like, there's just no meetings. There's no. And that wasn't normal either. But so today, Trump hosted the Brazilian president, Bolsonaro. And for those who are not familiar with this guy, he's a straight up
authoritarian.
Yeah, he's a straight up terrifying guy. He's praised torture. He has called refugees the scum of the world. He has compared same-sex adoption to pedophilia. He has praised Brazil's military dictatorship. He's called for extrajudicial killings. In the same meeting, I mean, Trump said that he's thinking about adding or including Brazil to NATO. Did you hear this? Did you see this?
The U.S. is now apparently considering a membership request to NATO.
So I feel like he doesn't understand what NATO even stands for.
I mean, it's like the Atlantic still. It's got like one of
But there's an N, which counts for North Atlantic, okay?
Did you know that when they first formed NATO, there was a proposal to allow Brazil to join?
Oh, there was. So it does come within the North Atlantic region?
No. I mean, that was very...
Not really? Okay. No.
That NATO would...
Okay. Don't confuse me in this late at night.
Trump is just trying to undermine NATO in general. That's his own goal. Like he does not like NATO. If he could withdraw, he would. That's one thing that even his own party still is against him on.
Right. It's Putin's goal. It's Putin's goal. Yeah.
For Trump, he considers other states to be economic rivals, competitors. So why are we in alliances with our economic rivals? Why are we giving money to economic rivals? Why does Germany have cars when Germany competes with America in selling cars?
I mean, I guess that's how he operated his business, right? And he thinks it's the same type of thing. But in the same meeting, he also, I remember you mentioned that he said that Brazil is close to the equator. What was he talking about? What?
His, I still didn't get the whole story there. It was the space launching, though. He wants to use Brazil to launch his, like, spaceships for the Space Force because it's close to the equator.
I just want to know what the ships will be doing up there. Oh, it's, okay, it's close to the equator.
But yeah. Why would we not launch them from American soil?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how the equator is closer to space versus...
So there is a space reason that matters.
Okay, tell me.
It's a space reason. I couldn't tell you the details. I just know it does matter.
It does matter the closer to the equator. Yes.
This is purely easier going it is off to get of, like, sci-fi books, and like, I fuzzed out in the details. But there is kind of an issue there. It's closer
I'm like,
to space.
I'm pretty sure it can't be. Isn't the Earth like a sphere? Isn't
it's like
are
a
we like
sphere.
The same distance? Huh?
It's a lumpy. It's a little bit wonky. So the, you know, the
it's a little bit lumpy.
It's compressed or something. So the equator kind of bulges out. I'm making this up.
So maybe the Earth is chunky in the middle like me, and it's a little bit closer to space. Is that what's happening?
Yes, it ate a bit too much, and now it's like, okay, take your launching point from the middle around here. You'll get to space quicker.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. You can view easy-to-understand charts and market data, and you can place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as the 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so that you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of the 45th a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at the45th.robinhood.com. Well, I mean, you know, once he gets an idea in his head, this guy just can't quit. So let's see where that goes. Another thing that came up in this meeting was that he attacked deceased Senator John McCain once again. And he did that a couple days ago on Twitter, too. And I'm trying to understand did something happen that he keeps bringing up John McCain recently? I don't understand what's happening.
He's a petty man with a grudge, and attacking dead people is not something he sees a problem with.
He was like, I never liked him. You know, he called him a name when he tweeted it. Shoot, what was the name
like
he called
loser?
Him?
Oh, like low last in his like last in his grade or something. McCain.
Oh, right. That he's last in his...
Like class? Oh, God, yeah. Last in class, last in Annapolis or something. Something stupid. And then he was attacking the daughter. So for a while, I have like... I'll get all these... On Twitter, I'll get all these messages from people, like tweets and DMs from people who either think I'm Meghan McCain or like want me to get in touch with her.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. And I just like kind of brushed it, like, do I look like her? I don't think so. I hope not. And just
that's very odd.
And I figured out what it was. People are trying to reach The View.
Oh my God. And you're The View from LL2.
So yeah. I finally figured out why everyone is trying to get me to pass messages on to Meghan McCain. Like, sorry, no, don't know her. Can't help you.
was at Susan Simpson just taken?
I made the Twitter when I had the blog like a decade ago and never changed it.
Maybe you could update it and keep your followers. I don't know how that works, but oh God, that makes sense. Okay. Well, you know, he's been going off on, I mean, the last 3 or 4 days, there seems to be kind of an uptick in the tweets and the craziness, and enough to the extent that I remember you said earlier, you don't trust this, but George Conway, Kelly Conway's husband started tweeting out the, what is it called? The DSM-5 or something?
Oh,
the diagnostic manual. Oh, you did? Yeah. He's been tweeting. I mean, basically, he's like, this guy's got narcissistic personality disorder. He's got a mental health issue. And I just wonder about what their evenings are like when he does something like that, when George does something like that, and Kellyanne has to come home.
That's the thing. I do not think we can take this at face value. I do not think that what they're portraying to be in public is necessarily the truth. Or
what if? What if Kellyanne is really in on it?
That's
and
like,
she's like
that's
a crusader.
Yeah.
A crusader from the inside.
Are there, like, basically they're hedging their bets. Like, whatever happens, they've got at least one, maybe two of them can like spin this off afterwards.
Is employable.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Because here's the thing, me and my husband, if we argue over the trash or something, it's going to be a tense evening. So I don't even understand like how this can go. I maybe they have some ground rules or something, but most married couples, I don't think could overcome this. this craziness.
It's not real. I mean, maybe like there's some basis like of their feelings, but it's not, this public act of theirs cannot be real. I don't believe it. Not entirely.
Interesting. You know what, Susan? I used to be a little bit skeptical of your skepticism, but now I'm starting to believe it. I'm like, you know what? She's got a sixth
sense. Just be cynical all the time.
I believe nothing anymore.
Although, did you see Trump called him a loser in his tweet?
Called who?
Conway.
George?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. And then Conway responded to that too.
I need to get on Twitter more often. I have missed all the craziness that apparently
you don't. On. You totally don't. But I hope you didn't miss Devin Nunes' cow.
I've not followed it. I need to go follow the Twitter cow, the Nunes cow.
Well, do you know a little bit about the story?
All I know is that Nunes is mad that the internet was mean to him, so he's suing it.
Yeah. So Devin Nunes is so mad that he actually filed a lawsuit in Virginia
against the Twitter cow.
Well, against Twitter, he wants $250 million in damages from Twitter for failing to police the accounts, two accounts at Devin Cow and another parody account called Devin Nunes' Mom. So funny. And so he sued his mom and the parody account of a cow, which I just think is brilliant, is supposed to be, this cow is supposed to be a cow that is suffering on Devin Nunes' Iowa farm.
All right, here we go. I'm going to go follow this cow right now.
Follow the cow. Right now, this cow has 231,000 followers because there is a Twitter campaign to get him more followers than Nunes himself. He's still a little ways off, about 100K off or so, 160K off, but I'm guessing another 24 hours he'll be there. But oh yeah.
He's one less, it is long. Farther away now. There we go.
Right. Good, Susan, because this cow is brilliant. This cow is making cheese and dairy puns all day. I love him. So, you know, we know Devin Nunes is very, very close to his president. But he says in this complaint that he endured, quote, because of these Twitter accounts, what no human being should ever have to bear and suffer in their whole life. He said it caused him to win re-election last November by a narrower margin than in the past. What? And it distracted him from running the House investigation into Russian attempts to influence the 2016 election. So he was so distracted.
Oh, that's why he fucked up.
Right. He was so distracted by the by Twitter. I mean, basically, the complaint's crazy. The complaint talks about how, like, you know, that it also – that in contravention to Virginia law, these Twitter accounts use insulting language. And I'm like, Trump just called dead senator. I mean, what are you saying? But anyway,
no one told me that lawsuit. Like I could sue people for being mean to me on the internet. This changes everything.
I mean, look, the legal theory is defamation. As if anybody's going to take these parody accounts and what they're saying seriously, but it does bring to mind how Trump, hasn't he threatened some legal action or something against Saturday Night Live too?
Like three times.
Yeah, he has. Right.
And against all the media and against like Facebook and Twitter. Basically anyone that has a platform that opposes him. He's not a big fan of that.
Yeah. So, you know, people are saying that this lawsuit won't get anywhere. These are clearly satire parody accounts, kind of like Saturday Night Live is parody. But I kind of wonder now. I'm like, you know, I feel like if any of these folks, you know, want to take any of this stuff all the way up to the Supreme Court, I don't trust this court anymore.
Okay. I still think that no matter what the current makeup of the Supreme Court is, Devin's cow is definitely not going to be silenced because that is too absurd. At this current stage, Devin's cow is safe. There are closer cases I'd be concerned about, but this one, I think they're fine.
We're okay. Well, speaking of, you mentioned earlier how Trump is reacting to all kinds of different, you know, things. But he did tweet yesterday, I think, about the press being the enemy of the people. I mean, like, it was a crazy, it was like a Twitter rant. He just said it over and over and over. Let me find that tweet. Knowing full well how many times members of the media and media institutions have now been attacked.
Have been killed.
Have been killed, yeah.
Well, at the press conference today with Bolsonaro, of course, one of the first questions, not the first question, was about the Nunes lawsuit. And Trump was all in favor of it. And he was talking about how much collusion there's going on with Twitter and the Democrats and whatnot. And it's about time someone took on Devin Scow. At Devin Cow, that is.
Wait, did Trump actually mention the cow?
Oh, yeah. He's asked about it. Well, he mentioned the cow, not the cow part.
I wonder if he follows the cow. I got to figure that out. But yeah, he tweeted yesterday, the fake news media has never been more dishonest or corrupt than it is right now. Fake news is the absolute enemy of the people and our country itself. I mean, that's some flippin' strong language. That's pretty strong language.
But no one pays attention to him, so, other than his base.
I mean, right. Other than the white nationalists, who are not actually a problem even, right?
But those tweets are so tuned out, right? Like, right now, those tweets get almost no attention. It's just white noise.
You know, Susan, I think that there are people.
Oh, they still matter. They still, not sorry, I'm not arguing that they don't, but in terms of like the, from normal people.
Oh, for us.
Yeah. For like the actual people, yeah. Media. Yeah. It's turned into white noise to a certain degree.
It has. That's true. It's just like, you know, some elderly person who's going senile is just jabbering and you just ignore it. But the point is that he really could be inspiring somebody who is going to take it seriously, and who's really going to believe it. Because when he says enemy of the people, enemy of the country, I mean, that's like he's saying that the media is like treasonous and traitorous and is that
yeah,
a word?
He
I don't
believes
know.
It.
But the point is an enemy should be hurt. So it's pretty scary. If anything deserves a lawsuit, it's probably that. All right. So looks like that's it for us this week. Thanks for tuning in. And thank you, Susan. You have a good week. And folks, we'll be back in 7 days.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.